From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a focused look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today On Deadline is looking at the wound that's been festering on the American economy for the last 2 years. Inflation. The Federal Reserve Bank that sets key interest rates has made it clear that until inflation hits its 2% target, rates will stay where they are, which is currently at a 23-year high. There was hope that the tide could be turning in 2024. That's because 2023's 11 straight rate hikes were expected to bring inflation down, and many were also expecting the Fed to start hitting the brakes on those hikes. Now it seems that that might have been wishful thinking. Thanks to food, energy, and shelter costs continuing to rise, the latest report on the Consumer Price Index from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that prices over the 12-month period ending in March rose 3.5%. Because of this, Fed Chair Jerome Powell says that rate cuts will take longer than previously expected. Interest rates and inflation have an impact on how much we spend at the grocery store, whether or not we can afford to splurge a little bit, or when people can buy a home. For people already facing poverty, this impact can be pretty dire. It can mean skipping meals, losing a home, and more. Greg Silverman is the CEO and executive director of the West Side Campaign Against Hunger, an organization in New York City that works to feed those who could otherwise go hungry. Silverman shared with Odyssey that because of record inflation, it's growing increasingly hard for them to help those in need. In fact, they've seen a 182% increase in demand for their services.
Let's talk about the increasing demand for your services. It has been a pretty dramatic increase, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, we all thought the pandemic would be the apex of sadly being busy and of hunger in New York City. But post-pandemic, technically post-pandemic, the situation for New Yorkers in need is just much worse. We've seen a 182% increase alone at our Upper West Side distribution point.
182%. That, you know, you do just the raw math. That is a lot more people asking for your help.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking. I mean, we used to give out at Thanksgiving time we used to have a 1,000 turkey challenge and give out 1,000 turkeys over a week. And now, 2 weeks ago, I remember we were doing distribution of just our regular food, and we had 700 people, families, every single day. I mean, at one location. The need is higher than ever. The cost to make ends meet for people is higher than ever. And the cost to make ends meet for nonprofits is higher than ever.
Can you pinpoint why more people are coming to you even since the end of the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I think, right, it's some ways a created perfect storm. We have inflation, especially for food. We all see it when we go to the grocery store, has gone through the roof, especially for things like fresh produce. People are more focused on healthy foods, and those things are really expensive, and they continue to be. We have an asylum seeker crisis where people are coming to the United States. They need support. They're not getting it. They can't work. And so they need help. And so they're coming for food. And we have a massively decreased safety net that we tested out across the country, a city, state, and federal level. We built a strong safety net in the pandemic, and we actually decreased food insecurity. And then we dismantled this tested and proven model to decrease hunger for children, for seniors, and we haven't brought it back. And so you can see it in the state budget that just passed. Hunger was flatlined, right? This is like, it's been forgotten.
Greg, we used to think that food insecurity only affected lower income families. Are you seeing middle class working families who are struggling as well?
Yeah. I mean, look, if you say that a quarter of our customers are kids, they're not supposed to be working, right? They're in school. If you say over a quarter or a third are seniors who have already put their time in working, you got half our population of customers are working age, and they either are underemployed or they're unable to work, a lot of them, right? Like, you have lots of, we have MTA drivers coming through. We have, you know, service workers. We have teachers. We have all kinds of people who are so essential and were considered essential during the pandemic who are coming to get, who are struggling for food. And then you have all these asylum seekers as well who want to work. They're asking us, how can we get jobs? They're not allowed to work. And also, I'd say, you know, if you came and saw what's happening on the Upper West Side at our location 86, the West Side Campaign Against Hunger, you would see people who look, you know, everyone looks just like you and me, right? They're coming for food. They might be on their cell phone applying for a job. They're, you know, dressed nicely. Like, there's these stereotypes of what people look like when they come for food. It's like, there are no, these stereotypes don't exist anymore.
While workers saw wage growth spike to 8% in 2020, inflation peaked at 9% in 2022, all but wiping out any positive movement workers saw. Fast forward to January of this year, and the trend reversed. Wage growth is sitting at 4.5%, and the CPI is hovering at around 3.4%, according to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. On top of that, a report from earlier this year found that from 2019 to 2023, hourly workers saw their wages increase by 12.1% when adjusted for inflation. However, the trend of wages outpacing inflation seems to have cooled recently, with wages again ticking down while inflation is on the rise. Michael Burnick, formerly of the California Employment Development Department, joined Odyssey to share what the weakening job market could mean for interest rates.
Well, we'll get the California-based report in 2 weeks, but today's report is important. You mentioned a couple of the key elements. Unemployment nationwide remains low, 3.9%. That's slightly higher than the 3.8% in March, but it's in this range of 3.7 to 3.9% that we've had since August of 2023. So unemployment nationwide remains low. Payroll job growth, though, came in considerably lower at 175,000 jobs nationwide than the monthly gains we've seen over the past year, which have been closer to about 240,000. So I think the main takeaway today, unemployment remains low, but job growth is slowing, and we'll see if it continues in the next couple months.
So people are getting jobs, they're just not getting paid very much.
Well, that's a point about wages that you brought up. Wage gains have also slowed, 3.9%. year over, that's below the 4.1%. And you can see if the wage gains, and these are, of course, average, are 3.9%, inflation is running at 3.4%. Inflation's cutting into a lot of that. And I think that is the reason that, even though these unemployment rates remain low, people are very concerned about the economy, if not negative on the economy.
You said that we have to keep watching this to see what the Fed is going to do next. And, you know, every time one of these reports comes out, we all kind of watch the stock market. We watch to see what the Fed's going to do. Is there really any way to predict?
They're going to, I think, look for whether the cooling of the labor market that we saw this month will continue over the next 2 to 3 months before deciding on any rate cuts. Perhaps in the fall, but I don't think we're going to see any rate cuts again for some time, given not so much today's numbers as the inflation numbers that came out a couple weeks ago. So I think those numbers still high at 3.4, 3.5%. That's what's going to be driving the Fed decision.
Talk a little bit about where we saw the main fields of growth. I understand healthcare was still hot.
Oh, Holly, healthcare is always hot. It's been hot for the last 3 years. Yeah, healthcare was the main job growth field, 56,000 jobs added, healthcare services and hospitals in particular. Healthcare has been the big gainer for some time. This month, we also, government went down considerably this month, but social services has been a big gainer. That continued to gain. That was the second biggest sector growth. That was 31,000. Transportation and warehousing added 22,000. So those were the three main areas, healthcare, social services, and transportation. The other sectors really didn't show more than minimal job growth.
How are the wages in those hot areas like healthcare?
Well, healthcare has gone up. And again, healthcare is the main driver of all the sectors. And it's true, Holly, nationwide as well as especially here in California in terms of job growth. And, you know, we had a new healthcare ordinance, statewide statute, to increase healthcare wages, set a minimum of $25. That was to go into effect in June, July. It's been put on hold. But healthcare wages remain strong for most jobs.
So many questions remain about the current U.S. economy, as some markers show rock-solid success and others indicate a suffering middle and working class. Is inflation keeping interest rates high, or is it the stronger-than-expected job market? And what exactly is the Fed considering when deciding whether or not to cut rates and to cut us some slack? Before the Fed's meeting last week, CBS News' Jill Schlesinger joined Odyssey to share more on what the economy is doing.
And what are we looking ahead to as far as any things to kind of keep keyed in on?
Well, this is going to be an interesting week, I think, because it's sort of going to be a lot of nothing but a lot of something underneath the hood. So tomorrow we will start the Federal Reserve will begin their two-day policy meeting. And on Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern time, they're going to come out with their decision. Now, this decision, it's widely expected to be a little bit of a yawn, meaning that they'll likely keep the federal funds rate, that's short-term interest rates, at 5.25% to 5.5%. Now, that's a 23-year high. We've seen this for many months now. Why are they doing this? Why would they do nothing? Because everyone wants rates to come down, right? But I think that we've seen some evidence recently that inflation just is continuing to be higher than the Fed would like. So great progress. It's sort of like it's like a diet. Like, oh my God, I've done so great for like 90 days. I'm really on it. I'm on my treadmill. I'm walking outside. Everything's good. But then you sort of plateau. And it feels a bit like the inflation story is plateaued, meaning that we haven't gotten the rate down to around this 2% level that the Fed really wants. So until they see that, I think the Fed's kind of like, nah, we're not going to do anything. So it's going to seem like they're not doing anything because they're not, like, action-wise. But we are going to be interested in seeing how do they describe the economy? What are they looking forward to? And then on Friday, it is the April employment report. That's going to be a big one also because, you know, interestingly, we have seen some evidence that the economy has slowed down. Last week, we got a GDP, a gross domestic product report. It showed that the economy was slowing down from this very kind of strong pace that we've seen that we saw most of last year and very strong in the fourth quarter. But in the first quarter, things kind of simmered down some. And I think that it's kind of weird when you think about that because you say, well, it's slowing down, but people are still spending money. And I think it's because the job situation is so good. And in the first quarter of the year, job creation averaged 276,000 jobs a month. That's ahead of last year where we had about 250,000 a month. So it's a strange time in the economy. Maybe we're in some sort of transition, but I think we'll know a little bit more after this week.
The central bank decided to keep interest rates where they are for the time being. Again. Despite the hope we had that rate cuts would come by June, or even sooner, it now seems that we may be in for a tough summer. Powell and the Fed say they need to see more before reducing rates. Overall, Americans are struggling, but some are doing better than others. For example, recent reports have suggested that one factor keeping inflation so high could be older, affluent Americans who have seen large financial gains in recent years. You see, from 2018 to 2023, Americans' wealth jumped from $98 trillion to $147 trillion. That's a massive increase, even when adjusting for inflation. But that wealth didn't distribute across the board. According to a report from the Associated Press, older Americans who are benefiting from outsized gains in the stock and housing market over the past several years are accounting for a larger share of consumer spending than ever before. And they're driving economic growth at a time when the Fed wants to see it slow down. It may seem strange, but the better off that this large swath of the population does, the worse off the rest of us are. So, when will our inflation turbulence finally end? Because I know we're all really ready for that seatbelt sign to turn off. In its April mortgage finance forecast, the Mortgage Bankers Association predicted that mortgage rates will fall from 6.8% in the first quarter of 2024 to 6.4% by the fourth quarter of this year. The industry group expects that rates will finally fall below 6% in the fourth quarter of 2025. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.